Welcome to the New York Times podcast, my beautiful grandchild of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I'm staring at the ceiling, the clock it won't stop ticking. I feel like I've been sleeping for too long now. It's like my heart stopped beating, and now I'm hardly breathing. And I'm afraid of leaving, scared to break down. And what am I waiting for? Cause I don't wanna wait no more. And I'm the only soldier in this lonely war. And I don't wanna fight myself no more.
We weren't gone.
That's true. That's true. I think it's pretty likely that most podcast listeners probably have no idea what song we played at the beginning of this week's podcast. So let me lay it out. That is Maddie Poppy, P-O-P-P-E, for all the reporters in the room, who is the winner of the new season of American Idol. And that is her debut single called Going, Going, Gone, which smart listeners will probably have already intuited was written by Julia Michaels. Duh. I'm here with Karen Gans, the only person, perhaps on the planet, who I could persuade to sit in the room with me and talk about American Idol for somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes. Hi, Karen.
Happy to be here, John.
Karen, how many times did I text you to make sure that you were fully caught up on American Idol in the past few days?
Many times, John.
A lot of times.
And I was quite busy the past few days, but you know what I did? I made time.
I appreciate that. That's what makes Karen a great pop music editor, and also maybe not very well slept.
And not a good friend. Yeah.
To me, very good friend. Perhaps not to others. So Karen, American Idol ended this week. What? Maddie Poppy won American Idol.
That was the outcome I was hoping for, John.
Do you know what I think about that?
John, I don't think you like Maddie Poppy.
I think it's a trash outcome.
Who did you want to win? Let's get to it.
You mean of the actual finalists or of the whole?
Okay, let's do both. Actual finalists and then your options.
Of the final three, mm-hmm. I think I probably would have enjoyed Caleb winning, mm-hmm. but I expected Gabby to win of the three. Now, of the 12.
We got to go with Michael J.
Or Katie Turner.
Yeah. No, I love them both too. Yes.
Yes. It's those two to me are the ones. But let's talk about a problem that is, I will say, a long-running American Idol problem, which is, number one, bland singers tend to win. Shouts to the boy Chris Allen. Aww. Shouts to all the Chris Allen fans who were heated at me on Twitter and in emails for that whole year.
Well, that was the most egregious of all Idol first and second places, because Adam Lambert is truly a breakout star in his way. From American Idol. Listen.
You can keep I'm going to not say anything. You're just going to be caveating for the next 20 minutes.
I enjoy Adam Lambert.
Sure. Yes. Conceptually, I'll take Adam Lambert over Chris Allen, but I would probably whoever came in third that season, I would probably take.
I wish I remember who. That was not the David Archuleta season. No, that was David Cook.
Yes, right. Yeah. Two Davids. From David to David. Okay. So all three American Idol finalists this year were blonde.
Yes.
They were white blonde singers.
Yes.
Country or country adjacent singers. This is a persistent issue for American Idol and has been in the past. There was a long stretch where all the winners were white guitar bros. Chris Allen, David Cook.
Philip Phillips.
Yo, shouts to Philip Phillips, man. Where's Philip Phillips?
That song is still going.
It's a banger.
Yep.
It's a banger. Some people covered it pretty effectively this season, actually. But this sort of like, I think if you look at who got cut just before the top three, you have Michael J. Woodard. Mm-hmm. Should we play something that Michael J. Woodard sang?
Can we please do my favorite of his performances?
Which one?
The one from Cabaret.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Let's listen to Maybe This Time, which is one of the earlier Michael J. Woodard performances.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky.
Oh my God.
Maybe this time I'll stay.
Oh my God.
Oh, oh my yes. God.
Come on, man.
Maybe this time, for the first time, it won't hurry away. Everybody, they love a winner. So nobody love me. Lady peaceful, lady happy. That's what I long to be. All the odds are there in my favor. Something's bound to begin.
What?
It's gonna happen. Wow. Happen sometime. Maybe this time. Maybe this time I'll win.
Okay, so that's a pretty like wackadoodle performance.
Katy Perry threw her chair.
It is a technically incredibly impressive performance, but it's also extremely strange. Michael J. Wooder is an extremely strange contestant.
Yes, he was a bowling alley attendant from Philadelphia, I believe.
Yes. And yeah. shouts to all bowling alley attendants.
Oh, yeah,
hard
no, I'm just trying to
those shoes smell.
I'm trying to place him, and he's young.
He's young.
He's young to be that familiar with cabaret.
He had an incredibly omnivorous approach to both music from a genre perspective that he performed, but also how he chose to perform songs in various genres. He did not always take expected paths. I like him much better than probably any of the final. Well, I like Gabby, but like than any of the.
You final. Really like Gabby?
I mean, she's just like a power. She just like comes and punch you in the nose. Like, she's really good.
I didn't
good.
Think she was that good.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just start with Maddie Poppy, though. Before okay, we really right. start going in.
Apologies to listeners who are confused.
You're going to be confused in the next 30 minutes. Yeah. So, like, you could tap out now. It's totally, we won't judge you if you tap out now. All right, so Maddie Poppy auditioned with, was it a Kermit the Frog song?
The Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, in the very beginning.
Yes.
Okay. I want to just be, I got to just come clean.
I like that you just call it a Kermit the Frog song.
Well, that's what they call it on American Idol. Yeah. Didn't she do it again on the finale?
With Kermit the Frog.
Sure.
However, whoever's voicing Kermit now, it's not the, wave.
Not the
same.
Not the
no.
wave. Not the wave. No. We see you. Don't ever come on podcast. We see you. Maddie Poppy is from Iowa. She is, how do we describe, she is maybe Lilith Fair Monkey. Kind
I would
of?
Say that she is a quirky singer-songwriter in the vein of a Regina Spektor.
That is extremely generous.
Thank you.
and I hope Regina Spektor is not listening to hear you drag her name through the mud by likening her to Maddie Poppy. Maddie Poppy, you know that throughout the season, this is the one singer who I have struggled with quite a bit. I did not understand the character of her voice, the outline, the tone of it. I just didn't. There's no texture to it. It feels incredibly neutral.
I disagree.
I'd like to hear more.
Yeah, no,
that.
I thought her voice was soothing, but not to the point of being dull. I felt that it felt effortless. Like, I enjoyed watching her sing because it never looked like a struggle on her face. I liked her personal style.
Because
I thought
it's not hard.
Okay, John.
Sorry.
I thought she was consistent in her messaging between her guitar playing, her voice, and her outfits.
Yeah, but you make
like
it sound
like
she's just
she
like,
was.
You make her sound like a chicken McNugget. Like it's the same whether you get it in Fargo, North Dakota, or Austin, Texas, or Columbia, South Carolina.
She was consistent. I wouldn't say she was a chicken nugget. Wow, we're really going there today.
I'm just saying. That's how you're describing her. You're describing her like a mass market
No,
product.
I knew when she opened her mouth that she was going to hit notes without me having to be like, she could have hit this note. And it sounded very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what really there is to hate about it.
I didn't, it was actually worse than hate, because hate implies like some kind of incredibly strong negative reaction. But I found I always like mentally zoned out during her performances. I just, there's no kind of like rasp or edge or kind of like toughness to her voice. It's just extremely clean. I mean, I think we're saying the same thing.
I think it was clean, yeah.
I think we're saying the same thing, but we're reacting to that same thing differently.
Okay, I'm looking for calmness and consistency in my life, John.
Yeah, I can probably learn something from that.
Giving me side eye.
I'm giving you a whole side body.
Yeah, actually. He's turning.
So Maddie Poppy, I thought had an unremarkable run through the season, but clearly not because she won American
also,
Idol.
Also, good song choice.
She did do for her voice.
Yeah.
She did. She understood. I will say this, more than almost anybody else except for Caleb, she really, her paramour.
Yes. That's a whole other subject.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
More than anyone except for maybe Caleb, she really understood what she could and could not do.
Totally agree. I just want to say one other thing about song choice. When you say song choice, it reminds me of judges saying that over and over again and hammering that in. Let's have a 2-minute sidebar just to discuss the judging this season because it felt...
I have way more than 2 minutes to say about the
judges. Okay, so we'll do a quick, we'll start there, then we'll sidebar.
Yeah.
So we had Lionel Richie, Katy Perry, and
Instant
Luke.
Identity.
Yes. Lionel Richie was amazing.
I kind of faded on him towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
I thought he ran out of things to say.
He did.
But he looks great.
He looks amazing.
He dresses well.
Great jackets.
My God.
Yeah.
Seriously. I said this on Twitter, and I hope someone will let me do it. I want to go shopping with him at H. Lorenzo. H. Lorenzo is a store I like in Los Angeles that has, like, absurdly expensive Italian leather jackets. They're, like, all, like, misshapen and formless, and they're, like, $6,000.
Do they just conform to your body?
Yeah, it's like one of these things. Yeah, like they kind of like,
yes,
it's like that. That's Lionel's. I bet his whole wardrobe's from there.
He looks amazing.
I'm all about it.
So well, I thought that Lionel was an effective judge dad.
Yes,
but there was no Simon Cowell. Nobody really. When I talk about song choice, I'm used to them being berated. Like this was the wrong song. You had the wrong song choice. No one really stepped up to do that.
Maybe
I thought that
Katie a little bit.
Katie a little bit. She got a little sharper in the last couple of episodes. And Luke was really just sort of happy to be there.
He's the Matty Poppy of judges.
Oh, come on. Come on. But I didn't feel like that the judges were hard enough on them.
I
felt like it was a very encouraging season. I thought maybe because it was their first season as the three judges, they were trying to establish themselves as, you know, nice, generous people.
But actually, here's something that I spent a lot of time thinking about. And I think Lionel's constant repetition about instant identity is actually meaningful here.
Yeah.
Think about those first few seasons of American Idol, right? You think about your Kelly Clarkson, your Ruben Studdards, Fantasia, et cetera. What you were really seeing on those shows were genuine, true amateurs, truly plucked from who knows where, with not no professional experience, but certainly no televised experience, like really rough around the edges. And what you were watching over the course of that season is a narrative unfold about them growing into themselves, about them professionalizing. And so at the end, the coronation is sort of this, you've arrived at this person. You started out a lump of clay and you're now this, this renegade comet.
Okay.
But I think a lot of what we saw this season are singers who knew who they were the minute that they walked in the door. And that didn't make for particularly interesting narrative. One of the things about Idol that I always liked was narrative.
Well, they also slowed it. They sped it up, rather, considerably.
I
mean, they were eliminating people by the handfuls every week. They didn't have as many. I mean, they really didn't make them go through the kind of paces that the old Idol contestants had to go through. They had to do all those really cheesy Ford ads. They had made them, you know, they invested. It was 4 hours a week.
Right. Now, but this
so you spent a lot more time with them.
Right. This year, 2 hours a week. And they were eliminated in batches as opposed to eliminated one at a time.
Yes.
So let's just look.
It was less about a journey.
Right. But let's just read the list of the finalists. Because I think we'll see that a lot of these people came in the door exactly who they went out the door as. Maddie, consistent, maybe was more confident at the end, but she wasn't a notably different artist. She didn't grow into herself. Caleb Lee Hutchinson, country singer, 19 years old, nice, rich, low voice, was exactly the same guy on the finale day as he basically was.
He was pretty charming, but yeah,
but basically he didn't change.
He didn't change now
as an artist.
He did lose like 80 pounds.
He did, as they constantly reminded people.
Yes.
Gabby Barrett came in basically the same person she went out. Cade Fainer, the southern rock guy with the good luscious hair. Do you guys go to the same hairstylist?
He's a great guitarist, John. So maybe we have that in common too.
Oh, wow.
guitarist.
Okay. Those two things can go hand in hand.
They do, yeah.
Genuine rock authority of the hair and the guitar.
That guy was baffling, but yeah.
But he came in exactly who he was when he left.
Yes.
Michael J is kind of a wild card. Yeah. We can skip Michael J. Journey maybe kind of grew throughout the competition.
I don't know if she was there long enough to grow.
Right. Katie Turner. We're going to spend a lot of time.
We're
going to spend a bunch of time on Katie Turner. But like Michelle Sissette, Ada Vox, like these are people who came in and they were like, I am this person.
Yes. All right. I think
Idol didn't change them. And I think that's one of the things that I struggled with this season, where I was just like, I don't know what I'm learning week to week. I don't know if I'm learning a thing.
Do you think that has more to do with the casting of the contestants or with the fact that we are even more deeply advanced into a social media world where these people, I mean, building your brand is something that people do starting at like age 7
I think it's both. I think it's hard. It must be hard to cast someone at this point in like modern society who would be totally raw.
I think Katie Turner actually was kind of like that.
Yeah. Should we start talking about Katie
Turner? Yeah, we have to.
We can just skip over a bunch of people and talk about Katie. Okay. Katie Turner.
Well, let's play some Katie Turner and then we'll talk about her.
Should we play her duet with Katy Perry?
I really enjoyed that.
Okay. Let's listen to from the finale. Katie Turner was not one of the three finalists, but she did perform in the finale along with many other of the top 12. She duetted with Katy Perry.
On a Katy Perry song that she said had particular significance to her.
And that song is?
It is Part of Me.
Let's listen.
Days like this I want to drive away. Pack my bags and watch your shadow fade. You chewed me up and spit me out like I was poison in your mouth. You took my light, you drained me down, but that was then and this is now. Now look at me, this is the part of me that you're never gonna ever take away from me. So you're bombs and you're blows, but you're not gonna break my soul. This is the part of me that you're never gonna ever take away from me, no. Now look at us, we're sparkling.
Okay, so Katy Turner's first audition. Katy Turner, first of all, let's just set up Katy Turner for the people.
Yeah.
Katy Turner, I think in my notebook about Idol mid-season, I said she probably listens to Frankie Cosmos. Like, Katy Turner, if you stumbled on Katy Turner busking somewhere, you would sign her to Double Double Whammy. You'd sign her to, like, Father Daughter. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't put her on American Idol necessarily.
Voice wise, maybe, but I don't know. I feel like personality wise, that she's like from Mars. I mean, like, I can't really contextualize her in any scene. She's like a very
unique,
eccentric teen.
She is most assuredly post scene. Her initial audition song was a self written song about basically
feminism. Yeah.
Feminism and like maybe hurting a boy who like talks down to her, like physically wounding someone, I think. Was that the first audition or the second audition?
I don't remember it.
It was
that
one of the early auditions. She is like, I mean, that is what the term sui generis was like invented for, was for Katy Turner. And one of the interesting things, she is one of the contestants that had a true narrative this season.
Yeah.
She started out as someone who was uncertain of herself and who like said that at her school, no one pays attention to her. And by the end, she's like duetting with Katy Perry on some like real boss shit.
And she's got Katy Perry singing like the harmony.
Yeah.
She's on the lead.
I know. It was very impressive.
And by the way, Katy Perry, wonderful vocal on the harmony.
Really did a good job.
It really sounded perfect.
I honestly have more warm feelings for Katy Perry after the season of American Idol than I have in like 5 years.
I think this show is the smartest thing that Katy Perry did. And I interviewed her last year for a story. I remember in the back of my head, I was like, oh yeah, because I was very focused on the album. It's because she really talked to her a little bit about American Idol. And I kind of didn't even bother because I was like, oh, I really don't even know if this is a good idea. Who's going to care about American Idol, whatever. But I really felt like this was like, it was just an injection of career genius.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. So Katy Turner, to me is one of the classic American Idol contestants, someone who you see develop, and I think will have a version of her life after this show that will be markedly different than the version of her life that she was set up.
And that you actually felt invested in and charmed by.
And want to pay attention to. Like, I will, whenever some publicist emails me about Katie Turner, like, I'll open that email.
You know, I mean.
Shouts to all the publicists who emails.
I was going to say, we get a lot of emails about old Idol contestants, and every time I just forward them to John because we are the last two people who recognize the names at this point.
It's a true story. But Katie Turner, I'll open your email. Just FYI.
DM us, Katie Turner.
Yeah, seriously, hit the DMs. At the beginning of the show, I said, my beautiful grandchild. And I think you know why I said my beautiful grandchild. Because when Katie Turner was eliminated from American Idol and posted about it on Instagram, one of the longest comments came from Ada Vox.
Ah, yes.
Let's listen to Ada Vox singing Creep by Radiohead.
When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eyes. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. But
Ada Vox is a drag queen. If you have not watched Idol this season, Ada Vox is a drag queen.
Who had auditioned for the show previously.
Maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, but under...
her male persona.
Yes. Adam, I believe was the name. But came back this season in full flower. And frankly, in much better voice.
Yeah.
Like, way better.
Yeah, no.
Tell me a little bit about your vibe on Ada Vox.
I liked Ada Vox. I wished her vocals were like a teeny bit better. It felt like the show, you mentioned this in your notebook, but after being really behind the times in terms of its embrace of like people of different sexual orientations and gender identities during its first run, the American Idol really had its lunch eaten by The Voice, which was extremely open-minded in this way. And in fact, the entire premise of the show was, we don't care what you look like. We only care what you sound like. That's the blind audition. We turn our chairs if we like your voice. Idol was somehow like constantly in the dark.
So, by choice, I think.
Like, I mean, somewhat by choice and somewhat by audience. I mean, I think what we were talking about earlier, I mean, as soon as the vote goes to the American public, the first people voted out are always the gay people and the people of color.
Gay people, people of color, yes. And so that's what we saw this year, which was, I thought, really frustrating to see some of the more talented singers falling victim to that.
And the show strenuously wanted Ada Vox to be there. They saved her during the last round when it was possible to do so.
A thing that I found encouraging this year. Okay, the dude who Katy Perry had like the fake crush on, or the Trevor.
Was that his name?
I think in another year of American Idol, like, that guy would end up top three. But yeah. I almost felt like they, by design, kept him out of the top 24 or the top 12 or whatever it was. Whatever the last level he got to, I almost felt like it was by design. Because there was something kind of like guileless and like a little dim and like perfectly nice about that guy. He reminded me, obviously, a lot of Chris Allen.
Yeah.
And I think there was I thought it was with intention that he was sent home.
I agree with that.
I mean, I didn't miss him.
I mean, I did applaud the show's, you know, effort to make good on the errors of the past.
Yeah, although I could have done without hearing Luke Bryan refer to Ron Boltanguez as Congo Ron. Like, maybe don't do that. Like, maybe just don't do that, Luke.
He'll learn.
If you're listening.
He'll be better season two.
Good Lord. Yes, but this was, so.
So Ada Vox, yes.
Ada Vox, Noah.
Loved Noah.
Noah didn't make it that far.
Introduced the term wig,
yeah,
to the American audience. You know what? What I would love to do is actually read a definition of wig by the New York Times styles reporter Matthew Schneier.
Did he publish that?
We did. We published this in our Troye Sivan story.
Oh, great. Let's go in.
Okay, I got to pull it up.
Please do.
So Matthew, for the record, also defined power bottom in a story that we did about power bottom shortly before power bottom got canceled.
Got canceled.
RIP power bottom.
Yes.
So according to
1.0 cancellation.
I know. Got to wonder what's going on with that now. So according to Matthew, he says in drag slang, gentrified into gay slang, gentrified into everyone's slang.
Just for the record, that I remember now. I remember, and that framing reminds me a lot of. Do you ever watch the National Spelling Bee?
Yes.
That is how they describe how words travel from like Greek to Latin, yes, to French to America. Like that's.
This is usually how it goes, yes, from drag to gay to everyone. Yes. Wig is one word shorthand for I am shocked. I am overwhelmed. My wig has been snatched off. No actual wig necessary.
True.
Yes.
True.
So, yes. Yeah, so wig.
Wig came up during Noah Davis's audition. I believe it came up not specific to the song he was singing. I think he just looked at Katy Perry and said wig.
Yes. And she got very excited.
Yes. Katy Perry said wig.
She said, did you just say wig?
Yes.
And then Lionel and Luke were just like, we don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Luke, who probably has hair plugs.
You can't say that.
Allegedly speculating.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so this was, there were many ways in which queer identity sort of made presence felt on American Idol this year. However, it did end with an incredible stroke of heteronormativity.
Yes. Which was the reveal that the final two contestants are dating. That was disappointing.
From Caleb to Maddie.
However, I will say it was nice when they were like, they hadn't revealed it yet. And they were the final two. Mm-hmm. And they were both like, we don't care who wins. And I was like, something.
Actually, only she said
that. Oh, she said that. I was like, something's going on.
Caleb's like, nah, I want to win. Caleb's like, I don't even know this girl.
He's like, I lost 200 pounds.
It's like,
give this to
it's
me.
It's my time.
Yes.
It's my time. So basically, so they're going to go on tour. So there's the American Idol tour is the top seven this summer. They're going to go on tour, so it's going to be the American Idol tour, a.k.a. the Caleb Lee Hutchinson and Maddie Poppy erotic fun adventure tour.
My God.
Also, if I'm not mistaken, did they not tease or allude to the fact somewhere earlier in the season that Gabby Barrett and Cade Fainter were kind of a thing?
I saw that during the finale as well when she came back in from her performance and Ryan Seacrest sent her into his arms.
Yes, right. So what's in the sauce at American Idol this year?
I don't know.
What's in the heteronormative sauce? I don't know. Michael Jay's probably looking around like, hey, what about me?
Michael Jay's in a class by himself.
He really is. He really is. Let's talk about Caleb a little bit. Besides okay. The fact that he did not say that he didn't care who won. Caleb, come on, man. That,
he
you
looked
gotta,
very happy for her.
Undoubtedly. But sometimes you got to step up and say that. Yeah. You got to speak it. All right. Let's listen to Caleb Lee Hutchinson covering Keith Whitley's Don't Close Your Eyes.
I know you loved him. Long time ago, and even now in my arms, you still want him, I know. But darling, this time that your memories die. When you love me tonight, don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Let it be me. Don't pretend it's him in some fantasy. Darling, just hold me tight when you love me tonight. Don't close your eyes.
Okay, so obviously the prototype for Caleb Lee Hutchinson is Scotty McCreery.
Yes.
Scotty McCreery won American Idol a bunch of years ago, a high school student with an incredibly low and deep voice, sort of a la Josh Turner. And Scotty has had like a pretty pockmarked run in Nashville.
He's still going. I get those press releases.
And actually probably is doing better now than he actually did in the immediate aftermath of his American Idol win. Scotty and Caleb have like a pretty reliable kind of country music voice, which is that low, deep texture. He's very good on songs about crying and songs about death. Caleb is like Scotty, but with a sense of humor. Caleb seems like a genuinely funny, ironic, weird guy.
He does. He did an impression of Lionel Richie that was actually frightening.
Really good.
It was so good.
Really good.
Yeah.
So Caleb sort of seems to have like both the narrative and the meta-narrative down, is how I feel about him. I feel he also, presuming no one screws his career up, he probably will have like a reasonably good run in Nashville. Nashville has been a home to many Idol winners and also rans.
Nashville has kept the Idol post, you know, grads in business more than anything other than perhaps Broadway.
Shout to Josh Grayson. Shout to Danny Gokey.
Gokey.
You know I bang with Gokey.
I never was able to get over the use of the dead wife narrative during his season.
Okay, but I've been saving something Gokey in my pocket, but I'm just going to bring it out right now.
When else really would you, John?
Okay, so here's the thing. There was a Carrie Underwood week this season on American Idol. Carrie Underwood was the most successful winner of American Idol. Gabby Barrett is like a Carrie Underwood in the making. But I noticed that when all the contestants were covering Carrie Underwood songs, no one covered Jesus Take the Wheel.
I noticed that too.
You want to know why?
I don't.
Play that Gokey version, Pedro.
So oh, scared.
She threw her hands up in the air. Jesus, take the wheel. Take it from my head. Cause I can't do this on my own. I'm letting go. Give me one more chance. Save me from this.
That was a horrifying experience listening to that entire song with John.
Oh, that was phenomenal.
I just took one for the team, which is the entire podcast listenership.
Oh, my God.
You're all welcome.
I'm going to send a link out to that on my Twitter, as I do every year.
Oh, my
God. It's that important.
I like the original version of that song. No offense,
Danny Gokey. I love the original version of that
song. Not my fave.
But Gokey brought in that Christian rock version. He brought in that megachurch version.
He did.
Woo! It's a banger. Can't be touched. I think that's why no contestant did it. Secretly. That's what I think.
I wonder why. Also interesting that Carrie Underwood was willing to come back and support the show, which was pretty cool. Because
she has a new single.
Right. And she was debuting her face, which we haven't seen since an accident where she fell on her face.
Am I wrong in thinking that her new face looks just basically like her old face?
Yeah.
I miss something?
No, I think everyone's really curious about what the face thing is.
Right. Because I at no point was I like, huh.
She looks great.
She looks like Carrie Underwood.
Kelly Clarkson, not coming back anymore. As you know, she is a
voice affiliate
mentor on The Voice.
She's voice gang. She's voice gang. Just as a sidebar, Karen, can I inform you of something a piece of information that I feel fairly confident you don't know?
Okay.
The person who won The Voice last night is a person named Bryn Cartelli.
I did know this because I follow Kelly Clarkson on Twitter.
Good call, but you've never watched one episode of The Voice this season.
Not this season, no.
Not me neither. I didn't. I'm happy to look into Bryn Cartelli, but I have nothing to say about her at the moment. speaking of Nashville, I want to just draw also a little bit of attention to two contestants who were kicked out pretty early this season, but who I think will have actually pretty long or at least substantial Nashville careers. The first is Harper Grace, who had an original song called Yard Sale.
Oh, yeah.
That we should definitely listen to because it knocks.
Got a gun loaded and he don't even know it, but I'm about to go sell him out. Shooting high pink signs on poles and power lines, covering every single inch of this town. And then I'll go back, a relax, a lawn chair, feet up. Yeah, I got price tags, trash bags full of his stuff. I'm having a yard sale. Everything must go, I'll give you a good deal. On a 67 Epiphone, if it's got a sticker on it, it's as good as gone, call it.
That's a really well-written song.
Yeah. I mean, good line.
As Murder Dog would have said back in the day, five knocks. Now, Harper Grace performed this for her first audition, and she came in literally as if she was signed to Arista Nashville already. And I remember Katy Perry kind of gave her this look like, you wrote that song?
Yeah.
It's very polished. It's very clean. It's really sharp. It could be in that, like, if female country singers were allowed to have hit songs, it could be a hit song. I thought she was very impressive. I thought, and indeed, if she wrote those songs, there's one other song she wrote that I thought was great. And also, Layla Spring. Should we play a little of Layla Spring with Dixie on the finale singing Blue by Leanne Rimes? And then Leanne Rimes comes out in the goth linen outfit, the California goth outfit, to come join them? Let's play a little bit of that. So Layla Spring is basically like Ray Lynn, but younger and more country. And she has a six-year-old sister who is even younger.
Yes, and everybody was on stage.
Everyone was on stage. It was a great time. If Layla Spring sticks to it, I think she'll have a lovely career in her 10s and 20s. I don't know how old she is.
Tens.
I think she's like 11 or something.
Very young.
She's very young. Okay, so to cycle back a little bit to talk about the narrative building or lack thereof this season. Typically on Idol in past years, Idol was drawn out over a bigger number of weeks. People were eliminated one at a time. There was a performance show episode, and then there was a result show.
Yep.
Performance episode was 2 hours.
It was a real time commitment.
Yeah, result show was either 1 or 2 hours, depending.
Also, the voting all occurred overnight. So the show would end, and the voting was not open until everybody had a chance to perform.
Exactly. And that's one of the first ways I knew that this season was fugazi.
Yep.
Is you can basically start voting the minute the show starts.
Before anybody's even performed.
Before people performed.
Yeah.
So you knew that people were just going to vote for their favorites. And this is another reason why I feel like if someone had successfully developed their narrative, say a Katy Turner.
Yep.
The odds were stacked against them because there are people who are just going to vote for Gabby Barrett regardless.
I agree.
Or going to vote for Caleb regardless. Or in this case, Maddie Poppy regardless. So I found that frustrating as a viewer, especially because one of the things that Idol has always sort of ostensibly trafficked in is like, well, this is a family. Like, we love everybody's part of the team. Oh, so and so's here, and so are the parents.
Yeah, when somebody got voted off, they're all surrounded and crying, and then they'd sing for a final
it's
time.
It's a moment, it's an event. And what ended up happening is you had Seacrest, more on Seacrest in a minute. You had Seacrest literally bumping up against a hard out because everything happens in one episode. So you had a two-hour episode where the performance, the voting, and the elimination was all in those 2 hours. So invariably, in like the last 45 seconds of the episode, he'd be like, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe, and we've got to say goodbye to Ada Vox, and then the credits roll.
Yeah.
And there's no time to satisfactorily say goodbye to someone. There's no time to give them a proper send-off.
Yeah, they used to get a reel. This was your life of American Idol reel. Yeah.
They would get to perform a song.
Yep.
I actually genuinely missed that. And I found I found it offensive.
Well, there's also that was sort of like where Seacrest used to shine. because he would really drag that out.
He was very good at dragging
it out. He was very good at dragging it out. He'd be like, you know, you're safe. And yeah, you know, I'm not going to do a Seacrest impression.
No, we shouldn't, because that might involve an impression of sexual misconduct. This has been a strange season. This has been a strange year. Don't laugh.
It came out really weird.
Okay.
An impression of sexual misconduct.
I'm just saying, one of the sub-narratives of Idol this season is that just before the beginning of the season, Ryan Seacrest was accused of sexual improprieties with
a makeup artist who had worked with him for a very long time.
From E, right?
Yes.
Not from ABC, yeah. Not from Idol or ABC or Fox.
Formerly of Fox, yeah.
Right. And unlike almost every other case of an accusation, it did not appear to do very much to impede his ability to publicly do his job. ABC obviously has a tremendous amount of money invested in him. E has a tremendous amount of money invested in him. There have not, as of yet, been subsequent allegations that I'm aware of. But every week when I watched, I felt like I was watching someone walk a real fine line, like mm-hmm. walk a tightrope, to try to not allude to or in any way do anything inappropriate. And it was never brought up, and there was never a ripple or any kind of like a rip in the show, but I was extremely aware of it for the entire time. And
I thought about it too, but Seacrest is a real pro. I mean, that's the one thing that used to strike me every time I watched the show. Mm-hmm. He was really good at emotionally managing everybody's, yeah. you know,
right.
what they were going through on stage.
Contestants, but, parents, judges,
yeah, balancing,
stage, behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, all of that, but also just the delicate dance between Simon being a real jerk and, you know, Paula being herself and all that. He was a really solid figure. So I was wondering if he was going to be sort of destabilized coming into the season. I thought he did a good job, but I did think about it every time I looked at him.
Yeah. Do you feel like he is viable as an ongoing host? I wonder about that. Because I feel like the allegations came out so close to the beginning of the season that there may not have been a lot of wiggle. And it's not like the Charlie Walk allegations where there were so many and they were so
yeah,
deep.
They just ripped him from the floor right before
the
finale.
They erased him. He was just gone.
Yeah.
But you can't do that with Seacrest, or you can't do that with Idol.
Well, also keep in mind that with all the new people and the new faces and voices entering the show, he was the only constant from the old version
of
the show.
That's a very good point.
So I think they needed him as the anchor. I mean, he really is a very reliable anchor for the show. He kept things moving. Although, they didn't let the judges have that much time to develop their personalities either, so they had to kind of conform to roles very quickly. So as we mentioned earlier, that Lionel was just sort of like appreciative dad. Katie was encouraging and also comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke was, you know, he represents probably what is the largest audience, which is the country audience. That's why you always end up with so many country contestants.
It's true.
I will say one thing. I really do like Manny Poppy, but when they were showing her hometown visit right before she went out, I could not believe how struck I was that there was not one person of color from her town.
Sure.
It was the whitest tableau I honestly have ever seen. My mind was blown.
I will say this about the Manny Poppy hometown visit. I've been struggling all season to find the context for her. I sort of, in the beginning, I said she's sort of like a Lilith Fair Monkey. I sort of can see her doing like Sheryl Crow type songs maybe. But I will say she seemed most at home throughout the whole season. They were doing a guitar pull on her porch.
Yeah, that was
her
great.
Her family, her father, I think it was grandfather.
Uncles,
or uncle.
Everybody was in there.
Yeah, they were doing a guitar pull. And she seemed totally at home. And I was like, oh, maybe she's more of a roots performer. Maybe that's what her natural thing. I don't know. There's something kind of neutral about her pop and Papa Jason singing. But when I saw her in that context, suddenly it clarified for me a little bit.
I still disagree.
Okay.
I could see her covering like Feist or something like that. Just a little like guitarist singer with a little bit more edge. I think she's a really good guitarist too. That's another thing I noticed. Guitars were really front and center this year. Yeah. Everybody auditioned with one. They all performed with one on the finale. All three.
Caleb.
But all three of them too on the finale.
Oh,
they
right.
all
Gabby.
Performed
yeah.
with guitars.
Yeah, yeah, good point. I forgot about Gabby.
Rolling Stone actually did run a story yesterday saying that people should not misinterpret the Chapter 11 of Gibson to be a signal that guitars are dead. People love to say that. And you all know
who
I love to say the guitars are alive. Apparently they are alive.
Who at this table would ever say that?
I don't know.
I can't think of a person. Can we talk just briefly about clothes?
Sure. You are the critical shopper.
I am. Okay, so I want to talk about the clothes of two people specifically. First, Katy Perry, who I thought was wardrobed tremendously.
She looked great.
I was
also wigs. Hashtag wig.
Yes.
Excellent wigs.
Actual wigs.
Legit wigs.
Snatched and replaced.
Yes.
Katy Perry was dressed so well and so differently from week to week, both in outfit, makeup, hair, all the above. I've seen her on tour a couple times. Obviously watch her in any number of public contexts.
We did sit next to each other the last time we saw her on tour.
One of us was sitting.
I was standing and
yes, you were.
Gleefully singing. Go on.
We'll show the photo someday. but I just thought whoever was in charge of her wardrobe this season was just outdoing him or herself or themselves. It was really impressive. And like Lionel, speaking of instant identity, Lionel looks like Lionel. Like he just looks like Luke looks like Luke. But I felt every week Katy came back as a different version of herself and none of it felt forced. And I was really impressed by that.
Yeah.
And then I just want to have a couple of words about Michael J's
jumpsuits.
I do not know. Actually, if the person who styled Michael J. Woodard is listening to this podcast.
You don't think he did it himself?
There were like some weird, you saw the burgundy, there was like a baseball jersey that was burgundy, but customized with an MJW.
Yeah.
You remember this?
Yeah.
And I think it said Mercy on the back. Who, did they just have a person making those? Like, is there like an in-house person who made, I would like anyone who has any insight, please. This is a serious query. Because, like, I might turn this into a style story. I would like to know who made Michael J's. I guess I could call Fox. But I would like to know if that person is out there. Please email us at podcast.
It's ABC now. It's not Fox, man.
Sorry. Whatever Karen said. That's the accurate information. But it's still, I still mean it. PopcastNYTimes.com. Michael J. Woodard wore literally, like, insane outfits that were, like, left over from an H-Town video in 1994. They were nutter butters.
They were.
But they were very spot on for him. I felt really almost, it was admirable. Like, I don't know if they were his clothes, you know, like styled himself, or if they were being provided to him or they went shopping for, I don't know. But I literally would look at his outfits and I was like, I've been to a lot of stores and I could not tell you
where one gets that. Yeah.
I don't even know what store would have.
Let's have him on. We'll ask him where he shops.
Okay. Michael J or your stylist or your grandma or mother, anyone who's involved in the clothing purchases of Michael J.
Call
podcast
us.
At nytimes.com. So Idol was renewed.
So we'll be doing this again is what you're saying.
Yes. But I was thinking a lot about the ratings. The ratings were like not that good.
How are they compared to The Voice, or we don't know?
I actually do know the answer because I had an email exchange earlier with John Koblin, our ferocious media reporter. And let me read to you some things that John Koblin said.
Okay. Wig?
Yes. John Koblin's subject heading, wig. Shouts to John Koblin, who got back to me in like 3 minutes with all the tea. A few things. I'm just going to read this right through. Ratings are decidedly so-so. Barely cracks the top 20 entertainment shows in the demo and is in the same range as Dick Wolf's Chicago shows. Sick burn, John.
Is that shade?
Sick burn. With the cost of Katy and Seacrest, it almost definitely loses money. As our favorite reality producer, Mike Darnell, Darnell gang, put it, it can't make money. Several execs off the record have told me they'd guess it loses north of $40 to $50 million for ABC. With that said, ABC is still very much in rebuilding mode. And while Roseanne has gangbuster ratings, it only filled 4.5 hours for ABC. Idol is filling tons of hours, and ABC needs them. And its finale beat The Voice.
It did.
What he says.
Wow.
There's more. Ratings are down everywhere. Mm-hmm. ABC is the one broadcast network that doesn't have the NFL, which inflates ratings and fills up tons of hours. So Idol effectively fills that slot. The network has also been in last place for a couple of years in a row, so it needs a middling performer. It's a loss leader for them. Gives them a live ratings anchor. Like sports, competition shows generally don't get a ton of DVR playbacks or delayed viewing. Idol was a huge part of the upfront presentation last week and is extremely important to its TV head, Ben Sherwood, who also brought back Roseanne. So it will continue to drive a huge marketing investment for it. That's one of the reasons Idol will lose so much money. Judges and marketing and not great ratings equals $50 million in losses. There's a little bit more.
But there's a reason why I'm not a business reporter. Actually, a lot of that was confusing. I will say that Katy Perry, in addition to being, you know, a charming on-screen presence.
She's rich.
No, well, in addition to that as well, she was a very loyal supporter on social media. She live tweeted a bunch of the episodes. She was on tour in other time zones.
You think she was probably contractually bound to do that?
I didn't see Luke doing it. And I don't know that I follow Lionel on Twitter. I apologize.
Does Luke know how to use his phone? Just curious.
But Katy was a really, like, she was whipping up excitement for it on Twitter and Instagram.
She seemed genuinely enthused.
She did.
And I actually kind of got the vibe that she will try to make Katie Turner's life easier and try to make Michael J's life easier. Like, I really, like, she was matronly in that way. And I thought that was admirable.
I agree.
I haven't decided if we're going to be back for season two, you and I.
Oh, well, I mean, I feel like contractually obligated to my soul to continue DVRing the show, even if I don't watch every episode.
We did our best.
John and I both, for the record, recapped American Idol and have been writing about it for many, many years. My entire life between, I'm going to say, like 2007 and 11 was like revolved. My schedules revolved around American Idol. Yeah. I would go on vacation to Puerto Rico.
That's how important it was.
There was no DVR and I would be live updating on the finales. Yes, it ate up and ruined much of my life.
Many nights.
So yeah, that's why we can't stop.
Can I shout out Sean Fennessy, who I used to do Idol recaps with when both of us worked at Vibe in 2007, which I have printed out and bound in a volume, in a slim volume on my shelf at home.
Okay.
It reminds me of a special time in my life.
I'm going to shout out Jason Bergman, who was a photo intern at Rolling Stone. We used to do a thing where we cut moments on video of like my favorite moments from the show, and that poor guy cut all those moments for me.
And while we're here, let's shout out Jim Caniello, who had me on his MTV Idol show one time.
Jim Caniello, one of my favorite people in the world.
And fed me to the wolves, because that was the year that I was blasting on Chris Allen.
Jim Caniello, very loyal to Chris Allen, but also a fan of Adam Lambert, of course.
Shouts to Jim. Jim's in L.A. now, right?
He is.
Shouts to Jim.
He works on other reality shows.
Great.
And well, while we're at it, shouts to Adam Lambert, who was super cool when he came to Rolling Stone.
Oh.
Very generous with his time. I could go on.
No, I think we're good.
All right, we're good.
Okay, so to wrap up, I would like to play the audition of a singer who I thought did not get far enough this season, but to me was actually also a very classic Idol contestant, which is to say someone who started out young and tender and who I think if she had been allowed to go through towards the end of the season would have arrived in full flower by the end, but unfortunately was cut off.
I wish
midway.
I knew who you're talking about.
So we're going to listen to Alyssa Raghunandan, and she covered Ariana Grande's Almost Is Never Enough.
I'd like to say we gave it a try.
That's our show. Please vote before the end of the episode so we know whether me or Karen are going to get eliminated.
Oh, my God. That's actually a really fun way to see if anybody made it to the end of this podcast.
That's true. Email us at podcastnytimes.com. Let us know which one of us you want to be eliminated. And then that person will never appear in the New York Times again. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Please email us. Please don't fire us from the New York Times. We're having a good time. Let's keep it clean, kids. You can email us your feelings, or if you know anything about the clothing of Michael J. Woodard, at podcast@nytimes.com. And you should subscribe, because we don't always talk about reality television. So subscribe to us anywhere you get your audio content, which would be Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or other audio services. Our producer is Pedro Chop Chop Chopper Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.